This article appeared in the spring 2009 issue of UU World magazine and is available online at uuworld.org. Opening Words: An Entangled Bank by Charles Darwin. It is interesting to contemplate an entangled bank, clothed with many plants of many kinds, with birds singing on the bushes, with various insects flitting about, and with worms crawling through the damp earth, and to reflect that these elaborately constructed forms, so different from each other and dependent on each other in so complex a manner, have all been produced by laws acting around us. There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers having been originally breathed into a few forms or into one, and that, whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved. From the concluding paragraph of Darwin's The Origin of Species, which introduced the theory of evolution by natural selection. Darwin was born 200 years ago on February 12, 1809. The Origin of Species was published 150 years ago in November 1859. Darwin's mother, Susanna Wedgwood, was part of a Unitarian family and took Charles to a Unitarian chapel before her death in 1817, but he grew up nominally Anglican after her death. Serving Dionysus by Victoria Weinstein. After having stayed up until 4 a.m. celebrating the closing of the musical Urinetown with my cast and crew, I am reflecting through bleary eyes on the religious meaning of this treasured part of my life. Jesus is my exemplar. He is an avatar of one kind of beauty, the beauty of love and truth incarnate, and he is Christ to me. But I gotta admit that I worshipped the gods of comedy and tragedy long before I worshipped Jesus as God, and I have never stopped leaving gifts at the altar of Dionysus, the patron deity of the theater. While my Christian faith lives as a spiritual discipline in my heart and my head, my Dionysian worship is instinctual, physical, and, although disciplined, highly creative. Christians create community by centering their lives around a sacred story, reenacted through worship and ritual, and internalized through private devotion and service to others, and Unitarian Universalists continue to build upon this worship heritage. In the theater, we create community by centering our lives, for a short period of time, around a particular show that we serve with all our talents in order to bring it to life for an audience. The hope is that, as it is with the church, audience and performers will share an experience of timelessness and transcendence. In the church, the preparation to achieve transcendence is expected to come from the willing heart and the faithful spirit. The secrets of good liturgy are held mostly by the clergy, who rarely openly discuss with the laity how important technique and craft are to the successful performance of it. To refer to worship as a performance is to cheapen and defile its sanctity. And yet, of course, liturgy is a performance of sorts, and although internal preparation is important, so is external technique. In the theater, performance is not a dirty word, and the hard work of technique, rehearsal, and careful preparation and orchestration of audience response is considered art, not gimmick. Singers work songs inside and out until they can bring just the right coloring to each phrase. Director and actors dissect the subtlest moments and movements so they'll serve the story better. Dancers repeat steps to the point of exhaustion in order to create the illusion that precision is easy and that their gyrations come from some natural expression of their characters. Everyone associated with the production is a high priest of his or her aspect of the show. All are makers of magic, and all participate in a communal effort to create a time out of time and a place that is no place and every place. While Christians are very uneasy with physical intimacy in the community, actors know that they cannot serve their God without it. How many times during the run of this show did I become aware on stage that I was breathing the very breath of my fellow actors as we got up in each other's faces during melodramatic scenes? How much of my sweat did the actress playing my daughter get on her hand when she placed her palm on my forehead twice in the second act? Dancers hold each other in the air. Stage lovers kiss and hold the kiss for an appropriately romantic interlude. I was pulled, grabbed, shoved, fake hit, caressed, embraced, caught in a faux faint, and in countless other ways brought into proximity with the bodies of other actors throughout the run. And then there is backstage. 15 women in one dressing room changing clothes, sharing deodorant, pinning each other's wigs, zipping and buttoning dresses, sharing lipstick and hairspray and one toilet. In the theater, community is created not just by good spiritual feelings and experiences, but by raw animal trust. It is one thing to pray together with pure and sincere intention. It is another thing for a dancer to jump into the arms of another dancer and to know that he will catch her, no matter what. The ancient rituals of the church can survive many mishaps, mistakes, and undignified blunders and retain their power. The theater, if done badly, cannot. A faithful Catholic will attend Mass to receive the Eucharist no matter how inept or unenergetic the parish priest. Patrons of the performing arts, however, tolerate no such sloppiness. Just as there is a losing of self to God in the religious life, there can be a losing of self to the higher aims of the show in the theater. On opening night, when my microphone went out, I ran off stage and hiked my skirt up to my waist in the darkness to give technicians access to my mic pack, anchored by a bandage around the torso. This frantic scenario had to be repeated 3 times to make emergency repairs before my mic could be fixed during intermission. No one thought a thing of it. There is no modesty in the theater. While crew members rushed to make me audible, dancers ripped off clothes in the wings and changed costumes. Young, old, male, female, gay, straight, black, white, no one blinks or even notices their semi-naked comrades rushing into the next set of clothing, shoes, and wigs. There is only the urgency to get back on stage in time and to take one's place in accomplishing this entertainment. All is illusion. The audience, absorbed in a clever song and dance or scene, has no idea whatsoever that behind the facade of the set and up in the lighting gallery there is a beehive of activity, a constant whispered din of technicians issuing orders across headsets, actors dodging scenery and other performers, mini-dramas and crises, and a thick coating of curtain dust and special effect fog enveloping everything. The joy of it, for me, is in its madness, in its ephemeral beauty, and in the ineffable spirit that infuses every production in a different, yet identical, way. In the church, all members of the community ought to know that they are unique conduits of the holy, and that they have a unique gift to give in the sharing of themselves. But they often do not know or trust this. In the theater, every participant in the production not only knows that they have a unique gift to give, but are very clear on exactly how they are to use that gift in the service of this particular production. There is a real thrill in that clarity, and in the wild, intimate, highly physical experience of being part of a living, storytelling organism that seeks to illuminate some deeper truth about life's meaning for 2 brief hours under hot lights in the temple we call the theater. This essay first appeared December 8, 2008, on the blog peacebang.com. The Reverend Victoria Weinstein is minister of the First Parish Unitarian Church in Norwell, Massachusetts. Sabbath, Ecological Spiritual Delight, by Patricia Guthman Harish. What comes to your mind when you think of Sabbath? Does it just mean another Sunday to you? Do you think of rest, a break from work? I call Sabbath an ecological spiritual delight. Perhaps that wasn't the first thought that came to your mind. Oftentimes we think of ecology as just referring to the world of nature, yet the dictionary suggests ecology concerns the totality or pattern of relations between organisms and their environment. Trying to make a positive difference in this totality as an individual can seem just too much. One can feel so helpless and insignificant in the midst of global crises such as the destruction and deterioration of the natural environment, world hunger, killing and unrest among nations and neighborhoods, recycling, voting, responsible consumerism, picking up trash, trying to practice right relationship, all seem to be positive actions, the right thing to do. Yet, do these actions stir the heart and soul, or fill the spirit? Sometimes, sometimes not. Maybe what there is to do, at times, is to not do. Maybe what there is to do is to slow down and walk lightly on the earth, even if just for a moment. Might it be possible to take a day from time to time to rest and reconnect with all of creation, its wonders and its creatures? Work and do in the mundane world for, let's say, 6 days, but take a seventh day to make a place for the sacred. This is what the Jewish Sabbath, or Shabbat, is all about. From an outsider's perspective, the Jewish Sabbath may appear somber and restrictive, a list of do's and don'ts. Yet in the Hebrew Bible, writings of the ancient rabbis, and Jewish literature through the present age, Sabbath is extolled as being a sublime gift from God. Shabbat begins shortly before sunset on Friday night and is introduced with the lighting of the Sabbath candles. The meal is usually simple to avoid a lot of preparation for an end-of-the-workday meal. There are prayers, blessings over the wine and bread. With special care, the home becomes like a miniature sanctuary. Saturday morning is traditionally a time for prayer and study. The midday meal may include guests, and like the first meal, there are prayers and blessings, and perhaps songs are sung after the meal. The afternoon is dedicated to relaxing pursuits, perhaps walks, reading, study, companionship with family and friends, even napping. The mood throughout should be one of enjoyment. Shabbat traditionally ends, however, bitter, sweetly on Saturday night with the Havdalah, meaning distinction ceremony. In addition to well wishes for the coming week, it is said some of the customs are to comfort the soul that grieves when Sabbath ends. The ritual meals, wine, singing, company of family, guests, friends, perhaps of the congregational community if one ventures out to the synagogue, demonstrate that as Abraham Joshua Heschel observes in The Sabbath, Its Meaning for the Modern Man, the Sabbath is a day of the soul as well as of the body. Comfort and pleasure are an integral part of the Sabbath observance. People, in their entirety, with all of their faculties, must share its blessing. According to Heschel, 6 days a week we live under the tyranny of things of space. On the Sabbath, we try to become attuned to holiness in time. It is a day on which we are called upon to share in what is eternal in time, to turn from the results of creation to the mystery of creation, from the world of creation to the creation of the world. In Marcia Falk's The Book of Blessings, she writes, In an ideal world, we might be aware of the potential for holiness at every moment of every day. Yet in the real world, the business of life, the busyness of life, often seems to distract us from our most profound connections. Shabbat returns a sense of balance, helps us to regain our perspective. It is an opportunity for pause, to step back from our occupation with the world and to appreciate instead our very being in the world. In the language of Heschel, he who wants to enter the holiness of the day must first lay down the profanity of clattering commerce, of being yoked to toil. Say farewell to manual work. 6 days a week we wrestle with the world, wringing the profit from the earth. On the Sabbath, we especially care for the seed of eternity planted in the soul. Refraining from labor and resting on the Sabbath isn't for the sake of preparing for the tasks and productivity of the other 6 days of the week. For the purpose of recovering one's lost strength and becoming fit for the forthcoming labor, Heschel writes, the Sabbath is a day for the sake of life. It is not an interlude, but the climax of living. Try as we might, it is difficult to maintain a sense of the sacred and the holy throughout the busyness of the week. We get caught up in the tyranny of things. As stated by Heschel, technical civilization is the product of labor, of man's exertion of power for the sake of gain, for the sake of producing goods. It begins when man, dissatisfied with what is available in nature, becomes engaged in a struggle with the forces of nature in order to enhance his safety and to increase his comfort. In spite of our triumphs, we have fallen victims to the work of our hands. It is as if the forces we had conquered have conquered us. The intent, as Heschel writes, is that on the seventh day, humanity has no right to tamper with God's world, to change the state of physical things. It is a day of rest for humanity and animal alike. It would not be a great sacrifice to consider setting aside a day each week to refrain from doing chores. Yet, what if this day of rest also included refraining from turning on the lights, using the telephone, the computer, listening to recorded music, cooking, or driving? There would be no work or spending of money, but there would be no recreational shopping or going out for entertainment either. Without the telephone and email, perhaps I would seek the companionship of those under my own roof. Without a car, perhaps I would stroll in my own neighborhood, invite a neighbor to the Sabbath table along the way, meet new neighbors, and really take in and notice my immediate surroundings. Look at the sky and out across the ocean instead of the pavement before and underneath me. Perhaps, without recorded music, among family and friends we would make our own joyful noise. Perhaps without electricity and other distractions, I would feel free to linger and meditate upon the beauty of the Shabbat candles, watching them until they burned out by themselves. What a luxury it would be to read all that you have been waiting to read. Not what you felt you should read, but what you want to read. I wonder if over time these practices and peace of mind would spill over into the other 6 days of the week. Perhaps refraining from the use of certain modern conveniences, letting the earth rest wouldn't seem to be so difficult throughout the week. And what if I wasn't the only one to let the earth rest this one day a week? What if, besides me and practicing Jews, others joined us who were interested in keeping and guarding the Sabbath and all of creation? Consider the impact on the use of electricity and fossil fuel, the reduction of pollutants and emissions into the air, the ingathering of love, joy, charity, and peace might even overflow into the world. I conclude with these words adapted from Heschel. The Sabbath, thus, is more than an armistice, more than an interlude. It is a profound conscious harmony of humankind and the world, a sympathy for all things, and a participation in the spirit that unites what is below and what is above. All that is divine in the world is brought into union. This is Sabbath and the true happiness of the universe. May it be so. Adapted from the UU's for Jewish Awareness 2008 Jerry Davidoff Award-winning sermon, delivered at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Outer Banks in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, July 15, 2007. The full sermon is available at uuja.org. The Reverend Patricia Guthman Harish is minister of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Outer Banks in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Creations, Low-Hanging Fruit, copyright 2008 by Angie Reed Garner, oil on canvas, 20 by 16 inches. Angie Reed Garner is a second-generation narrative painter. See her mother Joyce Garner's work in the spring 2007 issue, and a second-generation UU. Low-Hanging Fruit reflects her recent experience living in Pakistan and the Middle East. Right and wrong, she writes, and who did what are not the questions to ask when trying to figure out wars and bombs. The better question is, what will it take to create peaceful, just relations? I've been overwhelmed more days than not, just living through current events. Painting is where I struggle to see the world as it is. Poem, Totem Games by Yvonne Sion. Sometimes I glimpse my totem staring hard at me from distant, darkened doorways or the shadow of a tree. I peer, too, but all I see in the pulsing dark and gloom are laughing eyes, drawing me to a spot where memory fades into void beyond. "Guess who I am?" Totem cries, while shifting shape before my eyes. Lizard? Owl, rabbit, snake? Perhaps forgotten family ties link me to each shape it tries. Spider, dog, anteater, stork? Through ocean, mist, and fog it flies. To Guinea, Ghana, Benin, Congo, looking to lands beyond. So we play our games of tag, hide and seek and peekaboo. Totem often wins the match by running faster than I do, hiding longer, doting too. But every now and then I start to see a shape or find a clue that leads me breathless, racing to light beyond. Reprinted with permission from Totem Games, Poems in Search of African Identity. Copyright Yvonne Sion, Bunches of Time. 2007. UU World is the magazine of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. This recording is made possible by the UUA Department of Communications and the UUA Accessibilities Office. I'm Dick Hill. I'm an audiobook narrator, and my website is www.dickhill.com.